Okay. Well, I'm gonna place a wager. I don't usually gamble, but I will. I'll bet that's the first time you've heard that song all season. Herb Alpert and Sleigh Ride from the Herb Alpert Christmas album from many moons ago, from the 60s, I believe. And I had a personal copy. Oh, God. What was wrong with me? It's Hot and Cold. That's what's wrong. It's Saturday morning, and I'm Tom. That's you. You made that mistake. It's you turned on the radio, and this is what you got. Anyway, not bad. I mean, you know, in context, if you like Herb Alpert, it's good. Okay. So it's been a busy week. Oh my goodness, I have been. It's been hectic, and I ended the week yesterday with getting my iPhone fixed. And I went to see Chris Quimby at, I don't know what he calls his business, but he does iPhone repair in Belfast. And my iPhone, I have an iPhone 6S, which is one of the oldest iPhones you can have that you can still update. So I have it. I'd like to have an iPhone 11 Pro, but then Santa Claus has to give me $1,200 for Christmas. I don't think that's happening. So, and I usually stay one or two generations back. Now I'm, what, five generations back, I think. But the battery has been giving me signs, and I've been babying it, and I've been nursing it, and I plug it in when I can if I'm in the car, in the office. But Thursday, it went from like 70% down to 3 and shut itself off, and I'm like, oh, God. So went to see Chris. Chris banged that sucker out. It's always impressive to see somebody knows what he's doing. And he got it done, and got it done very affordably, and we got a chance to chat, which I normally get to listen to him and Chris Downs on this very radio station. And I've met Chris before, and I had Chris Downs do work for me years ago. And both great guys, and if you need iPhone service, they're very affordable. Way more affordable than buying a new iPhone. So that was good. I I've got the new battery in the phone, and I don't have to sweat. I don't have to have battery anxiety, because there's enough anxiety in the world without having phone battery anxiety. So that got taken care of for a very, very paltry sum, like I say, compared to any other alternate scheme. Speaking of batteries, this has been a battery week for me in that a local place offered me a bunch of hybrid batteries, which I bought and picked up, and I've been working through them, trying to sort out the good from the bad, and I got them affordably enough that I can segregate out the bad and still feel like I did reasonably well. the one thing, obviously, I need Prius batteries more than I need anything else, and I need second generation and newer. There were a couple of those, not enough, but enough to make it worthwhile. And then there were a bunch of Honda Civic hybrid batteries. If you're looking for a Honda Civic hybrid battery, Tom is the guy to call, because I do have some. I don't rebuild them yet, but I've got enough raw material now that I can. And I had one Honda Civic hybrid that needed a battery. I'd stolen it out of the car, and I just pulled one of the batteries that we had gotten and popped it in the car, started right up, ran like a top. So I've been, the dilemma is in doing something like this where there was like 15 batteries or something like that, was where do I put them? I mean, I have room in my shop, but then I don't have room for a lot of other stuff. So I've been breaking them down into what I need and then scrapping out sheet metal cases and things I don't need. So I'm always fascinated. But the cool part here, the really cool part, Wednesday, I picked this stuff up and it was at a junkyard. And, you know, it was cold on Wednesday. That was the day it was kind of raw out. I tell you what, if it was like today, it was warm out, I would be there. I'd have to make several trips for the stuff I'd pick up. Tom in a junkyard is a good day. I just want you to know that. And I don't spend enough time in junkyards. And Pete is going, yeah, sure, that's good. That's good. But there used to be a junkyard in Brewer, in town Brewer, remember that? And I used to go over there and just window shop. I remember when we had our first child, he was maybe two or three. I take him with me and we go walk around the junkyard. It was a good time. It was a father-son moment. So anyway, so that was a big deal. And, you know, we got enough to keep me busy. I didn't need a project. I didn't need projects on batteries this week, but I certainly have had my share of them. And I've been winding my way through in between all the other things going on. So, let's see. There was a thing. Let me just look this up real quick because I don't want to misquote they discovered the most distant galaxy that has ever been observed. Ever. And they're calling it Mambo number 9. Now, you know where we got to go with this one, because I got a break coming up. And we probably will never make it to Mambo number 9. But we could go to a different number, Mambo, because it's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning, and we'll be right back. Stay with us. There's more to come. Okay, we're back. It's 8:19. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. Good morning again. I'm Tom. The phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line 601-207-4478. If you have questions, it's the season. And no, I haven't found my thermal imaging camera yet, but it will show up. It's small, so it could be anywhere. And I got thermal imaging to do. I did find my remote reading thermometer, which is a poor second choice, but it'll show up. I have to check with Maria. She'll find it. My daughter is able to ferret out stuff that I've buried somewhere in the shop. Let's see. I have to confess a sin. And I had a customer who needed. I don't think I confessed this last week because I don't know if I. I don't think I did it last week. I think it was this week. I had a customer that had a car with xenon headlights or high intensity headlights. And I was just reading a thing about them this morning. Somebody posted a question about these headlights, and they're very expensive to service. And one of the lights was out, and it wasn't the bulb. And a xenon headlight uses a ballast like a fluorescent light does to sort of a starter to ignite the bulb, so to speak. And then a small voltage keeps it illuminated. Well, if you wind up going to a dealer to get this serviced with new parts, it's about $1,800 for a headlight. Give me a break. So I will service them with used parts if I have them available, but they're prone to failure. They were problematic. So this car was a beater. So the headlight that headlight repair would have been probably about four times the value of the car. But it still runs. It had 300 some thousand miles on it. It's a rough car. But so I got LED lights, and it was very easy repair to swap out the xenon for LED, and that's where the confession part comes in, because I hate LED lights. But they were, I think the bulbs themselves were like $20 for two online, and then there's about $50 in labor on my part. It takes a little bit of time to get it apart. I probably should have charged a little more, but we had gone through a couple of false starts trying to keep the xenon headlights, and they just weren't hacking it. I don't think I charged for one of them, just one or two. Well, I don't think I charged it. Did I charge any? I don't think I charged anything, just because I wasn't sure they were going to work, and I was right because they didn't. So then we got the LEDs, but it's chagrin and dismay to put it in, but they are bright, and I had somebody come up behind me. I was in the rain, it's a lot harder to see. It was raining profusely this morning. Somebody comes up behind me in a pickup truck with LED lights. And, you got that little thing on your rear view mirror you flip so the lights don't blind you if somebody's right up behind you. Well, I flipped that thing and they were still too bright. So, of course, it was a truck, so it's higher as well. But it was like, man, not good. So, And speaking of which, I'm not in my regular car today, and I discovered the car I was driving up in had one low beam out. So, you know, then the dilemma is, do I drive with one low beam on or high beams? So I just kept flipping back and forth, hoping no police officer would see me, because I could give him my sob story. But I didn't particularly want to change a light bulb at 6 o'clock in the morning in the rain either. So I did make it. And it's daylight, kind of. It's dark out, my goodness. But we'll persevere. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line 601-207-4478. Was it Tuesday? The day we had some warm weather, was that Tuesday, I think? I had some gravel that had been delivered to my driveway a couple weeks ago, and I flattened some of it. I've got this four-wheel drive little tractor that a friend of mine is selling me, made by Bombardier. It was made in the 80s, and it runs good. But I'm not used to, you know, using a tractor, and this is a stick shift. Not that that matters. It's not a big deal. But I had to flatten out this gravel, and it's not a big tractor, so it takes a little bit. You don't just go and knock the pile down like I'm driving a bulldozer. So I finally got the hang of it. I had flattened some gravel a couple of weeks ago. It was a Sunday and it was raining, and I did enough till I was just, you know, kind of soaked, and I went inside for the rest of the day. But I had more to do, so I knocked it out. It was still kind of frozen. It was warm on Tuesday, but it was still kind of frozen, but I was able to knock it down and got the hang of back dragging the bucket, and it was a good time. And it wasn't raining, so that was good. Well, let's see. We got a text message here. My son found a new battery, solid-state battery made from glass. What do you know? I hear the radio ads about energy storage subsidies. Does that include your tanks? I don't know. I don't think so. It would be nice if it did. I could do it with the business. The new battery, the solid state battery, I've heard a lot about it. It's supposed to be a great thing. The person who invented the lithium ion battery is associated with the solid state battery. So remains to be seen if it's going to, pass muster. It'd be nice if it did, because it was not using a lot of exotic materials to accomplish what it was supposed to do. So that's something to look forward to. Let's see. We got a phone call on line one. There we go. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good, good. I have an insulation question.
Sure.
I've got a daylight walkout basement framed out 2x6. And from the outside in, you've got the siding, the Tyvek, the plywood, the framing. And I want to do the interior with shiplap 3/4. Now, I'm toying with an idea, but I wanted to get some advice. I was planning on insulating the wall cavity with Roxel. It's actually intended for 2x8 walls, so it might be a little bit compressed. But I also have another product that I've been using in radiant floor applications. It's called Prodex. It's a rolled product. It's essentially like a foam foil type of reflective insulation. It doesn't have much R value, but the reflective nature of it is what adds the benefit. I was thinking about covering the interior of the wall after I insulate it with that product, but then I started getting concerned about where the condensation point might be, and I don't want to run into any mold problems.
I'll be candid with you. I'm not a big fan, of these kind of products. I just pulled it up here for a couple of reasons. One, you don't get much R value, as you said. The radiant barrier effect is not imperative, I would be more inclined to eliminate that cost and use a good quality plastic vapor barrier and seal it meticulously. If you did get moisture in the cavity, it would tend to dry to the outside of the building. So I don't think that's a big issue. The other option would be, it's a little bit more work, would be to put a layer of actual foam insulation, foil faced foam, that gives you maybe an inch would be adequate. The ideal way to do this, if this was a perfect world, would be on the outside of the building, to wrap the actual outside of the building with R10 foam or greater.
I got you.
And the idea here is that cavity now is above the dew point. If you have R10 or more, it never gets below freezing in that cavity, so you don't have condensation forming. Then you could eliminate the barriers on the inside, especially using something like Roxel in the cavity.
Okay, I see. So just to summarize, if I go with the Roxel, a little bit compressed, for it's essentially for a 2x8 wall.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's going to give me R30, so apply that in the cavity, and then a really good plastic vapor barrier seal.
Right. Yep.
Okay.
All right.
All righty.
Okay.
Well, hey, thank you very much, General.
Okay.
Gentlemen, love your show.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye. General, I get uncomfortable when people call me gentleman. There's only one of me here right now, so... makes me feel like I should have a tie on. Couple things. When you're doing a vapor barrier in this kind of application, excuse me, aside from sealing the barrier itself, you need to seal it to the floor and to the ceiling. In other words, you're trying to stop all air movement out into that cavity. And that also means sealing around the boxes. That's number one. Number two, foil-faced bubble wrap. The whole concept of a radiant barrier is that heat radiates. You know, you have three modes of heat transfer. And I tell you what, I've got a break coming up. Why don't we take the break? And when we come back, I will go into a little bit of gory detail on this, just so we kind of understand, because it bears repeating. And if nothing else, I can repeat myself. All right, we're back. It's 8:36 here. It's hot and cold. It's Saturday morning. I'm Tom, and it's Mr. Joe Cocker in the background. He's feeling better. It's good to know. Yes, he is. Can I leave that? That's a good song, isn't it? Anyway, our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line is 601-207-4478. I have to say it faster. I'm not going to get it right. I'm gonna just totally go out of auto mode into some... netherworld of not remembering. I do want to tell you about my friend Alan at General Appliance, who helped me again. Doggone it, I had a refrigerator problem, and actually it manifested in the summer, and I procrastinated for quite a long time. And here's the deal. I called Alan at 989-4341 because I had ice in the bottom of the freezer, on the floor of the freezer, which says to me that there's a drain somewhere that's probably not working. And I was right. And Alan confirmed it. And he told me I have to clean the drain. Okay. Well, it was summertime or it was hot out. Well, I'm not sure it was summer. It might have been late summer, early autumn. So I said, well, I'm going to wait until it's cold out. I'm going to put all the frozen food in a tote. Put it out on the porch because it's cold out, and I will have at it. So I forget what – I think maybe it was grocery shopping night. We got home, and I look in the bottom of the freezer. And I've beat the ice out of the bottom of the freezer several times. And, I mean, it would be a lot of ice. You know, it would be half inch thick. So it wasn't in the way. But it certainly has an effect on the frozen food, having all this moisture in there. So I said, okay, I've had enough of this. I'm going to do this now. And I put the stuff in the tote. Now, of course, I picked the day when it wasn't below freezing. I didn't realize this until I put the stuff out on the porch. I said, it doesn't feel that cold out. It was 34 degrees, but, you know, it'll take a long time to thaw that frozen food in 34 degrees. It was nighttime. So I had to run to work to get some tools, which I did. And I opened the back of the refrigerator and found the drain, little drain hose. That was clear. So then I got into the freezer, which is a little bit of a contortionist thing because it has a pull-out drawer. It wasn't a swing-out thing. So I'm getting around that, and I had to take cover off. And I finally found the hole. It was frozen. It was full of ice. And, of course, the refrigerator's off for a half hour or so, so it's all melting. So then I was able to get it cleared. I melted it further with some hot water and made sure the drain worked. Put everything back together, and it's fine. And Alan assured me it would be fine if I cleared the drain, which I did. And so what I guess I'm trying to say to you, my fine audience on Saturday mornings, is that if you have an appliance problem, you can go to Center Street and Brewer Monday through Friday from 9 to 4 to see Alan and get a part if you need it. I wasn't sure if I needed a part or not initially, and I looked online a little bit as well and thought I might need something, but I could jerry-rig it because it's just a drain. It wasn't a working part as such. And as it turned out, I didn't need that. I just needed to thaw it and clean it out, which I did. And but you can call Alan at 989-4341, and he will guide you, as he guided me and made it sound like I could do this, which I did. And I saved a service call. He could have done it as a service call for me, but he said, you know, you can do this. And I didn't have to worry about any food thawing because I put it outside and no critters got into the tote. So it was all good. So, okay. So let's talk about the way, what insulation actually does for us. Excuse me. In terms of heat transfer, and I'm simplifying because I'm just a simple guy. There's three modes of heat transfer. There's conduction, there's convection, and there's radiation, okay? So conduction is if you have a cold surface, you put your warm hand on it, your warm hand gets cold, the heat is being conducted away from your warm hand into the cold surface, a cold window or something like that, a cold steel door. That's when we insulate. As the caller had asked earlier, when you put the Roxel in the wall cavity, that cuts heat loss by conduction. Convection is heat movement. It's warm air rising, cold air dropping, or warm water rising, cold water dropping. That's you induce this flow of a fluid, whether it's air or water, would be the two most common fluids that we as humans would deal with. Now we're in the house. You've got the wood stove there. The warm air is rising to the ceiling. It hits a surface that is cold and then conducts heat out. Okay? So by insulating, we would lose less heat by the convection would be moving the heat up to the ceiling where it could conduct out through what could be a cold surface. So hence we insulate. The third form of heat transfer is radiation. Same wood stove, you're standing in front of it, you feel the heat coming at you. That's not conduction because you're not touching the stove. You touch the stove, you're going to burn your hand. That's a lot that's a lot of heat transfer. Radiation, if you stand outside in the sun, you feel that 93 million mile away star radiating heat at you. So if you take a piece of aluminum foil and hold it in between you and the sun, what happens? You do not feel the sun radiating on you. But here's the thing. If you take a piece of wood, a piece of masonite, a piece of cardboard, you hold it between you and the sun, you get the same effect. Okay? So it's not an imperative that insulation needs to be foil-faced to cut radiative loss. If you have that piece of Roxel, you get a one-inch piece of half-inch piece of Roxel, half-inch piece of fiberglass, if you could handle such a thing, you know, if it would stay intact. And you hold that between the sun and you, you're not going to feel that radiant energy coming on you. So it's not critical that it be foil-faced. Conductive heat loss is the most intensive form of heat transfer. So that's why we insulate with a lot of insulation. You don't radiate heat through that 8 inches of Roxel. It just ain't happening. If it does, you've got some pretty intense radiation. It just ain't happening though. So this whole idea of a radiant barrier, what is unique about a radiant barrier or shiny radiant barrier is the last part I just said. It's shiny. And we as humans, I think, are attracted to shiny things. I'm not kidding. I'm not overstating the case. I think the fact that it's shiny kind of attracts us. But the actual benefit is not that significant. Now, we're going to do a radiant floor. A caller had talked about using foil-faced bubble wrap underneath the radiant floor. The foil is, you know, you get more radiation at higher temperatures. Radiant floor is what? Radiant slab, excuse me, which is probably what this was. Maybe 110 degrees, maybe 120. The surface underneath that is not that cold. You put a concrete slab on top of the ground, the soil underneath the building is going to be comparatively warm, especially to the outside. It's always going to be above freezing. Maybe it'll probably be 50, 60 degrees. Because even though there might be insulation there, it's still going to conduct heat down through. Using foil-faced bubble wrap doesn't really do much for you. We've got a conductive heat loss here between that bottom of that slab and the ground underneath it. It's not a radiative heat loss. It's a radiant floor, yes, but the radiant heat transfer is not an issue. It's conductive heat transfer. So R value is king. And that means something more than bubble wrap. So hopefully that all made sense and I haven't insulted anybody. it's hard to deal with this just because it's out there. You got foil-faced bubble wrap. It looks cool. They call it high-tech, gee whiz, and they always have some kind of third world. If you look at the testing agencies for foil-faced bubble wrap type insulation or thin foam like eighth-inch or quarter-inch foam, like packaging foam that is foil on both sides, it's some testing company like Joe's Testing Company, and I've looked some of these up just because, you know, they have test data, as they should. And if you look up the testing agency the testing company, you look at, I looked one up, and it was a house with some kind of funky addition on the back. It was just, you know, there's a place called Factory Mutual, which is what all most of that testing is done by Factory Mutual for insulation and stuff like that, windows and things. That's a bona fide testing agency. And you know, using Joe's, it wasn't Joe's testing agency, but it was something like, make up a name. And then, you know, you're some guy named Joe who has some kind of degree in something, might be in philosophy. Who claims that this stuff does wonders, and it does have an application. There's a couple of applications where it might benefit, where you need, you know, if you had an overhead door, you want something flexible over the door, it's better than nothing. Or if you're trying to insulate a window, and you want something that's relatively flexible, you can put in the window and take out, it's kind of okay, but it's not that effective an insulation. So, for what it's worth, it's shiny though. So, and as I mentioned in weeks gone by, Joe Steerbrook, who is the building scientist guru person who tells me and everybody else about how to insulate buildings properly, has many wonderful things to say about foil faced stuff. So, phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. I also have an axe to grind on something else. I had a customer who had a Prius, and he had a replacement battery put in the car. It was an aftermarket replacement battery, and I'm going to name the company because they kind of perturbed me. It's a company called Dorman. They make replacement parts for cars. They do an excellent job. They sell all over the country. They also remanufacture Prius batteries, which I happen to know at least a little bit about. And Unfortunately, the car came from down south, and coming from down south, the battery tended to be predisposed to having problems. So the battery failed prematurely because of the heat down south. The Prius batteries are conditioned. They're cooled in the summer, warmed in the winter. But if you're in Florida, it's summertime and you park the car, the car's not running, battery isn't cooled anymore, and they can fail prematurely. And this is what happened. Customer had a battery replaced with a Dorman battery to the tune of a couple grand. When he got it, it had a 3-year warranty. They have now downsized their warranty to 1 year. And he came to me last May. So this is May of this year. The battery had failed. Would I replace the battery with the warranty battery that he's going to get for free? So absolutely. So I did the replacement for him, and I tested the car, the battery that had failed. There was one bad cell out of 28. I replaced the pack. You know, you got to send back the old one, and they're shipping the thing up in a reusable shipping container. It's heavy as all get out. I mean, they're 85 pounds. They're big. So it ships, comes, I have to send the core back down, and I put the replacement battery in, and off he goes. Well, he called me a couple weeks ago. Guess what? I got a battery problem. He was down out of state. He was able to make it back up here. I scanned the car again. One bad cell. So I contacted Dorman. I had to get some paperwork, and guess what? Not covered under the warranty. The replacement battery is only good for the original warranty, which expired back in June. So, tough noogies, guy, you're out of luck. So the good news is that I can rebuild his battery. The bad news is I'm not going to warranty the battery. I've come to appreciate that as one who rebuilds batteries and warranties them, if somebody's been into the battery before me, and that doesn't matter if it's Joe in Augusta or it's Dorman down wherever they happen to be, I don't know what they put in there for battery for cells, and I will make sure it doesn't hurt you bad if it has to be rebuilt again, but I'm not going to be on the hook for somebody else's mistake. And hopefully there'll only be one bad cell and it never comes back. And I'm going to discount it anyway, just because I feel badly that the guy has to deal with this. And I'm, you know, is what it is, I guess, but I'm not impressed with the fact that they, after six, not even, well, I guess it is 6 months now. After 6 months, they just said, oh, well, you know, tough. I appreciate the fact warranty, you know, only goes so far. But by the same token, you know, you've got a customer who spent a lot of money on this. And, you know, things happen. Things, you know, stuff fails under warranty. And I've had other Dorman stuff that's failed under warranty and it's been covered and they've been fine. But the battery is a little bit different animal. It's a big money item. So I'm not real happy with them. And I had a car that had a Dorman battery that was from down south that had failed. I had sold the car with the battery was in it, and I warrantied the battery. Well, I opened it up. I said, well, you know, I've got this battery. It's under warranty. And they said, do you have the original receipt? I said, no, I sold the car. I didn't have the receipt from when it was put in, even though the date is stamped on the thing, and it was within a warranty period, and I got a serial number. No, tough. So I repaired the battery and ultimately wound up having to replace it because it just kept going. So on my nickel, because I had sold the car. So I don't have a warm fuzzy for that whole episode. Unfortunately, it happens. Oh, let's see. We've just about out of time for this hour. We've got more stuff coming up next hour. I want to talk a little bit about mold and mildew and smells in general. It doesn't smell in the studio. I want to go on the record. Okay, I don't think I'm malodorous, at least not today. So that's I've got it. Let's see, where is that? I'm gonna cue it up here. Thursday. We missed it because we were not together on the radio, But Thursday, 12-12 and 1915, was the birth of Francis Albert Sinatra in Jersey. Was it Jersey City or Hoboken? Hoboken. Let's get it right, Tom. So I think it's only appropriate that we end the hour with the man. And I've got seasonal stuff. You know, this is a seasonal show. We'll be back. Stay with us. It's Hot and Cold. Hour number two coming up. All right, we're back. It's 9:07. It's Hot and Cold Saturday morning. Hour number two is the big radio thing has happened, has started. There's no going back now, by Godfrey. We're here to stay for a whole other hour. Phone number is 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. And I've been reading during the break, breaks, plural, the Farmer's Almanac, and I'm happy to say that they're completely ambiguous about the weather. basically they're saying December is going to be kind of cold, not cold, rainy and wet. And well, yeah, some of the time it is today, and then it's cold, and they miss the cold days, which I guess I'd rather have it be. I guess I don't want rainy. I want it just sunny and 50 degrees. That's what we're. That's my goal for next year. And we got a dial tone, so we don't have to go there. I'm going back to the Farmer's Almanac because I had other important information. this is the one that's kind of perplexed me about birds in this kind of weather. How do their little feet not freeze to the ground? How do they function? And I thought, well, gee, maybe. They got to have blood going to their feet, and how does that not? How do bad things not happen to them? As it turns out, you will be happy to know from the Farmer's Almanac. I'll read it verbatim. Birds' legs are particularly vulnerable as they are thin and unprotected by feathers. So the blood in the veins of their legs cools faster. As this cold blood runs up their legs, however, it passes by arteries which carry warm blood. This heat is transferred, allowing the blood flowing back down to the legs to be cooled, while the blood flowing back up to the core is warmed. So by the time the arterial blood reaches the feet, it is already cool, therefore does not lose a lot of heat. Ah, good science. And on the next page, it has the gestational days of different creatures. Elephant is top of the list at 640 days to 645 days. And then next is giraffe at 395. And next is a donkey at 340 days. Horse is also similar, about 340 days. Although a seal is 350 days, whereas a human's only 280. But going down the other end of the spectrum, because you need to know this information, I'm sure. A rabbit is 33 days and has 4 to 8 young. A rat is 22 days. That's incredible. And has 10. That's why we got to not have rats around, I guess. They just keep breeding. Our phone number, 1-800-966-1039. The text line is 601-207-4478. Hopefully we'll have Pete on in a little while. He probably won't be busy today because it's raining. Although I have kept him busy all week with various things. So we'll see. Pete did get his pellet stove repaired, and we will discuss that when he comes. I will save that story for him because we have to have something to talk about. Let's go over to line one. Good morning. You're on The Voice of Maine.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a roof insulating question for you.
Yeah.
I have a colonial style house. It has a lean-to off the back of it that turns into a garage, and it's north facing, so the snow doesn't melt off of it.
Hmm.
The garage is not heated, so what I'm experiencing is the heat coming down from the roof is melting the snow and causing ice on the back of the on the garage,
mm-hmm.
which is causing it to leak down through the roof. So I guess my question is, would you suggest insulating the house better, insulating the garage, or do I just put ice and water shield on the underneath the shingles?
Oh, good question. I'm trying to picture this in my mind's eye here. The ice and water shield, excuse me, is of value. You know, the old timers used to use a lot of flashing for those lower areas so it wouldn't stick. The other option would be to have a metal roof up there on that area where or flashing so it's able to shed. The garage is not insulated at all, the ceiling of the garage?
No, it's not. And the roof is one slope all the way down from the peak.
And what is the roof pitch roughly?
I wish I could tell you.
Okay. Is it steep or kind of shallow?
It's fairly steep.
Okay.
I mean, metal might work, except that would dump all the snow naturally right behind the house. And if I can't clear it out of there, it might cause problems in the spring.
Yeah, well, I mean, one way or the other, it's coming off the roof. The short-term solution might be to get some cables up there to melt it. That's a short-term solution, though. The roof insulation on the house certainly, if it's not adequate, is going to cause this to be just an ongoing problem. So a couple of parts to this, I think, make sense. One would be to get some more insulation in the house roof, and then the garage roof, ice and water shield will mitigate the problem, as would flashing. I mean, it isn't necessarily that it's going to slide off any quicker, but at least it's not going to leak the way it is now with shingles, where it can back up underneath the shingles. With metal, that becomes less of a likelihood, or with good flashing, or the ice and water shield. And I'd be inclined to do more serious flashing further up the roof with ice and water shield underneath it, just to mitigate this from happening.
Okay, hey, thanks.
Okay, you're welcome. In terms of the snow coming off the roof, it is what it is. I mean, it's if you one way or the other, moisture is coming off. It may come off as it may melt and come down and get all icy if it's on the north side. One way or the other, there's going to be moisture coming off the roof. That's kind of what we do with roofs, is we have moisture coming off them. Let's see. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Text line 601-207-4478. We got another break coming up here in a moment. I'm just looking. I wanted to talk a little bit about smells. I seem to have run into some questions over the past week related to odors of different shapes and forms. So I tell you what, let's take the break. And we come back, we will have the discussion of smells and mold, mildew, and things that, and pets, and maybe people. Be right back. Okay, we're back to 9:19. It's hot and cold Saturday morning. It is Saturday. Okay. I thought it was Sunday for a minute. Oh, my goodness. It was Sunday. I'd be up by now. I get up early on Sunday. I'm not a laggard. And I don't want you to call me one. I'm sorry. Our phone number is 1-800-966-1039. Our text line is 601-207-4478. I gathered up some firewood yesterday. I felt like somebody from a Dickens thing, except it was stuff I had cut in the autumn and had piled in the back of the building outside. And I went out with my electric chainsaw. And, you know, I was talking to, I had a customer who was we had sold a tank to, and he was an arborist. And he was using gas chainsaws, but I asked him what he thought of electric chainsaws. And he was impressed. He just hadn't needed a new saw yet, but I think his next saw was going to be a steel electric chainsaw, because they're pretty impressive. And I have a little, I think it's Works, W-O-R-X, and I picked it up. It was cheap on eBay. The catch is it runs for maybe an hour and a half, takes 8 hours to recharge, and I think that's right in sync with me. You know, maybe I go an hour and a half, and I need about 8 hours to recharge. So it's a perfect fit. They have fast chargers, but I don't want a fast charger. I like that 8-hour lapse. Let's go back to the phones. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine. Hello?
Hello.
Turn your radio down, please.
There we go.
Okay.
I have a fairly large house up at Moosehead. We put in a lot of recessed lighting years ago, and we want to retrofit that with the new LEDs.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if it's okay to put in, you know, 4 to 6 inches of fiberglass inside the can above the LED lights. They don't generate a lot of heat, so I thought it would be fine, but I can't find any place where it says it's okay or not.
I think you can. I would check on the individual light you're using, but I generally call them puck lights because it's like a hockey puck, and they're I don't think there'd be any issue at all in doing that. And also, while you have that apart, seal all the whole. Is this a cathedral ceiling type thing?
No, that's two of the ceilings go into an attic. Okay. Which is pretty well insulated, but
okay. I would be inclined, if I was doing this and I'm going up into an attic space, to seal any holes in there, maybe with a can of foam or something, before you stuff the fiberglass in.
Just
You know, you had ventilation in there before because you needed it, and now you don't, and it's of value and it won't take much. You can use caulk too; you don't have to use foam, but just seal the holes. Great. I think you'll be ahead of the game.
Excellent.
Okay.
All right. Thank you very much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. The revolutionary thing, LED recessed lighting, which doesn't have to be recessed. Like I say, it's a hockey puck right on the ceiling. And big change. And not big energy-saving change, simpler to put in. But from my point of view, prevents a tremendous number of problems that one would have with otherwise recessed lighting, just moving moisture out of the living space up into the attic where we do not want it. So I've had a couple of conversations with folks this past week about smells. And we do, you know, things do smell in life. The first one, though, was a couple came up this, like I say. First one was about mold, about a basement. And the generally, if you have a basement and it's all masonry and it's comparatively dry and you don't have foodstuffs for the mold to grow on, it's pretty unlikely one would have mold growing. I gave a lot of caveats there along the way, but the if it's a basement and it appears dry, but you've got, say, cardboard boxes sitting on the floor or wood on the floor or something like that, that's apt to get moldy just because it would, sitting on the floor, moisture can come up from the subgrade, especially on an older building, and cause that material to get moldy or mildewy. And that's pretty discernible when you go down the basement. A lot of folks will look at a basement wall if it's just bare concrete, and they'll see this white powder on the surface of the wall that isn't necessarily mold and probably is not. It's something called efflorescence, which is salts in the concrete or salts that come through from the ground that fluff out on the inside of the concrete as this moisture that comes through tends to dry out. That's not mold. But to be safe, if one is in a basement and thinks you have mold, there's enough spray on anti-mold things that you can get that you just spray it on and walk away. Now, the other part of this equation is that if one is looking to make real living space in the basement, we're going to have finished surfaces down there. And those finished surfaces are materials that will produce mold and mildew. So it's really important to keep those surfaces away from the masonry surfaces, segregate them with vapor barriers, moisture barriers, use materials that are not susceptible to mold. If the basement's wet, maybe you shouldn't do it. You know, if it's a damp basement, it isn't a good thing to do. Now, I had one area of my basement that was, well, the basement, when we were doing the house over, I had the wall spray foamed. Now, if you put spray foam on a wall that's damp, it tends to block a lot of the moisture from coming through. It's a vapor barrier, and it's plastic, so it's not going to mold. So that's a good step along the way. But I had one spot where the water line came through, where we did have water leaking in. It wasn't a tight seal. I tried to make it tight, and it still leaked, and there was a floor drain right there, and it was always wet. And what I wound up doing, as I've said on the show, we used some hydraulic cement to seal around the pipe, and were able to get it so it no longer leaked. And now the basement is completely dry. There's no hint of moisture. Of course, the spray foam helped a lot on the walls, and I have a product called DryCore on the floors, so I'm not walking on the concrete floor when I go down the basement. And the stuff that we have that is in boxes or might otherwise be affected by moisture is up off the floor. DryCore has a plastic substrate and then wood on top of it, OSB. So it keeps whatever you put on top of it dry. And that's sort of the approach you need to take, is nothing should be touching masonry. That can mold should be touching masonry. So that was number one, and that was early in the week I had this conversation. Number two was had somebody come in and looking at a car, and they said it smelled of dog. And I've had the car for a little while, and it doesn't – there's no hint of dog smell in it, but there is perception that this person had that there was a dog smell, which, okay, you know, you don't have to buy the car. But we have dealt with cars that stunk, reeked of dog or cigarettes. And you can get the smell to dissipate with a good cleaning and ventilation. If you're using the car, there's something in all automobiles called a cabin filter that should be changed out. I don't like to use perfumes to mask smells. I don't think that's healthy. And the smell's still going to be there if the perfume is gone bye-bye. So what we do with cars that are but smelly, is we wash them, we shampoo them, and then we will ozone them. We'll hit them with an ozone generator. That doesn't get it 100%, but it gets it maybe 92%. And the catch is that once all that's done, I might be done with the car, and you get in there and go... And you don't smell anything, but the car sits in the sun for a while, unused, with the windows rolled up, you'll still get some smell coming out of it. And it's my experience that at that point, using a car, not necessarily driving around with the windows down, but just using a car when you're running the car, you usually have the fan on to do something. It's either running AC or it's running the heat. Or you might have the windows open if it's a nice day. All of that helps. Just the normal use of a car with air moving. There's always ventilation in an automobile. You're going down the road 50, 60 miles an hour. Air's moving through the automobile in one form or another. So that smell tends to go away. But the number one thing is just cleaning. And that's not a big deal. It seems like it could be, but it's not. And I give you the professional clue here. If you have cloth seats in your car, they're usually made ruggedly enough that you can take a scrub brush to them with a little bit of laundry detergent and water and scrub it and get up a lather, and then have towels or microfiber, and you can get all the dirt out, which contributes to smell. So for what that's worth. We'll take a phone call, then we'll take a break. We got time here. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hey, Tom. I have a question for you. My house is about 200 years old. I have a dirt basement, a dirt floor basement, and boulder walls, and it's really cold down there.
Yeah.
There's timbers that support the floor, and they're unevenly spaced.
Yep.
I want to insulate that. And I'm not sure the best way. I was thinking on putting some kind of poly 2 mil, just stapling it up and then kind of cutting bad insulation. But I'm not sure the best way of insulating that.
Yeah. The best way would be spray foam. Not the cheapest way, but the best way. The next step, if you just want to keep the floors warmer, would be to cut and fit foam. You probably have very irregular spaces in an old building like this, but you could cut and fit foam and get it up into the cavity and maybe use some toenails to hold it in place, because it usually doesn't friction. If you can friction fit it in, that's fine, but sometimes you have, if you use some toenails. I would do that, and I would, you know, maybe foam around the edges. And the reason I would do this is because if you use something like fiberglass, especially with plastic underneath it, you're going to trap moisture because you've got this relatively damp space, which is a dirt floor basement. The other thing would be, and if I had a building like this and I wasn't rebuilding the floor is structurally okay, I would certainly consider spray foaming the walls to keep the basement warmer, and then maybe get a even a thin layer of spray foam underneath the floor, just because it's, you know, kind of a continuous barrier. As I say, it's not the cheapest date, but that kind of kills a couple of issues at the same time. It mitigates the moisture issue and makes the basement warmer, because those rock walls, which tend to be drafty and cold, are going to be a lot tighter and a lot warmer.
Yeah, well, just to let you know, above the granite wall is about 18 inches of brick, and I did spray foam that, and then I polyed from the spray foam down to the floor,
mm-hmm.
and I put a big tarp on the floor to keep it dry. So the basement's fairly dry.
Okay.
Given that, is that a different situation then?
Well, I would still avoid the fluffy insulation underneath the floor. I would still want to see a relatively impermeable barrier, so you don't. I mean, it's still, there's moisture down there, and it's going to condense out on a cold surface. There's the potential for it to condense out on that floor surface because it can get up through. So I would lean towards the foam. The other option would be, depending on the floor, not necessarily dependent on the age, is you could put the fluffy insulation in the cavity if you can get solid sheets of foam underneath the floor, and using that as a vapor barrier. That would work well because you could seal those edges and get the same benefit. And you could use thinner foam there, but it's kind of like a thick vapor barrier that you can... You know, and it's rigid, so it's easy to seal the edges.
How thick of board should I get of insulation tool?
No. If you're going to use it as a vapor barrier, you know, you could use anything, 1/2 inch, 3/4, 1 inch. 1 inch tends to be the best bang for the buck, but that's not real critical because we're just using this more as a vapor barrier than as a added insulation. The insulation is coming. The insulation actually comes from two things. One is if you have fiberglass up in there, but two is you're actually creating a dead air space that has some effective R value if you can make that space tight by putting foam underneath it.
Okay. One more question.
Sure.
I read on some website, you know, the old home has, I bought a thermal camera, and I can point it at the walls, and I can see areas where it's not insulated well. But then I read on the internet that insulating older homes is kind of hard because it'll create moisture, and, you know, rodents and insects will get there, and it didn't seem like there was a good solution for insulating these old homes.
I think it's more important to insulate than not. There's more potential. I mean, here's the deal. If you're not stripping the outside of the house, getting some insulation into the cavity is going to save you money. Being an old house, if you're not doing the outside, that those sheathing boards have shrunk enough that it is going to dry if any moisture gets in there. And you'll have to get a seasonal transition where you'll get some condensation buildup in there, but it's going to dry come springtime. So if that was a significant issue, every old house that's been insulated would be falling into the ground at this point, and it's not happening. So the short answer is, if you were savvy enough to get a thermal imaging camera and you can spot those areas, go ahead and insulate them.
All right, thank you.
Okay, good luck. Thanks for your call. We got to take a break here. We're a little behind the eight ball, but aren't we always? It's hot and cold. Stay with us. We'll be right back. All right. It's 9:42, and Mr. Blue Sky is actually here on the radio with me. That's my son, Pete. Good morning, Pete.
Good morning. What's going on?
we're living the dream right now.
Let me, you know, it's not that I don't like ELO. I like ELO. I think everybody likes ELO. It's just it's not an ELO kind of day.
It's not. Well, you know, you play that kind of music on a cloudy, crummy day like this.
No. You play that on a nice day, because then you look outside and it looks like the armies of Mordor are approaching.
Okay.
You know, with the wind, the rain, everything. Okay. Very
don't go with the trilogy. References.
Listen, Lord of the Rings references play. Okay, your audience is growing. Most of them have probably passed on, and we're getting a new generation. Right, and they all like Lord of the Rings.
I don't think you should be insulting any of my dead audience. Darn it!
I'm not insulting them. I respect them and the path they blazed for us. But it's a new era, and in our heating and cooling references, we're gonna be bringing in Lord of the Rings and Star Wars, maybe a little bit of Star Trek every once in a while.
Okay, all right. So, Pete, I have reserved the topic for you of the pellet stove saga.
About what was wrong with my stove?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
Well, last Monday, I had the professionals from Evergreen Home and Hearth come out. They got out very quickly, and they were out straight all day long. They got here at about 6. I was a little surprised, because I thought, well, they probably went home for the day, but they were still going. They were still going after they left here, too. There was two of them. It was Peter and Chandler, and they dug right into it. They had the whole thing apart much faster than I ever did. And there was a trick to getting the auger out. That's why I couldn't get it out, and that's why it's probably good that I paid them to do it. But what happened was right above the auger, but below the feed, there was this little lump of sawdust and creosote that had built up. And Peter told me that it just, as the auger turns, it's obviously too big to go down it. So it just kind of sits up there and bounces around. And one side of it was flat, so it probably at some point adhered to the side of the feed line. And all it takes is a couple of pellets, and then you got a nice little bridge, then all of a sudden it's jammed up and nothing's moving through it. And they put it all right back together again, and it was extremely reasonable price-wise, and it has worked wonderfully ever since. In fact, I'd say it's working better than it's worked in years.
Well, the thing...
It's excellent to have heat. I really enjoy it.
Yeah, heat is highly, highly rated, and it should be. I was girding myself for a big bill, as I know you were, and they were extremely reasonable in terms of what they accomplished and for the time they spent. So my hat is off
to
them.
There were two of them.
Yeah, there were two guys, and it kind of was a two-man operation, although one guy probably could have done it, but it was quicker with two. And sounds like they're a little like any heating guy. They're busy this time of year. So
yeah,
good.
Well, part of it falls on me, because you really shouldn't use a device like that as your primary heat, because when it goes down, you're kind of limited as far as service goes.
But, you know, building heats with a good mode. You and I have insulated it over the years, and we were using I've had that building vacant at times and kept it above freezing for about under $50 a month. I think, as a matter of fact...
With an electric heater.
Yeah, with an electric heater.
Yeah.
And the, the base price, I think, for having the service was $15. And the bill is like $50, so it's about $35 a month for electricity to keep the building from freezing. And really, you didn't spend that much more to keep it comfortable. So,
no, I probably spent about, I think I estimated it out to be somewhere between $40 and $50 to keep it reasonably heated for the week that it took them to get out and fix whatever the problem was.
I bet it's not even that much.
That's not bad at all.
No.
To not be freezing.
Yeah. Okay, so what's the deal with cars? Anything going on exciting?
Well, I've got a young lady coming in to, she's buying the red 2011 today. She's very excited about that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting a whole lot of traffic, given what the weather looks like, but you never know. I mean, it's gone both ways. Remember, we sold a Corolla during a blizzard once, so.
Yeah, that's right.
We just put out, it was ready the day before, but it just got put out yesterday. We've got a 2008 Ford Escape Hybrid with 117,000 miles on it. That's all-wheel drive. very nice shape. It's leather. It's got a 6CD changer, sunroof, navigation. I don't think it's got Bluetooth. It does have an auxiliary jack. Runs good. I like it.
Yeah.
Which means it'll probably sell quickly because I won't get to drive it that much. But that's $49.95 plus tax and title.
Wow.
Forget it. Yeah, but stuff's been going out pretty quick in the last week.
Yeah, it has. And I'm happy about that. So we got some text messages here for Pete. One is
okay.
Papa Bear up in Sangerville wanted to know if you were coming in. Someday we should have you in the studio with me. It reminds me of the picture we took years ago that we had up on our website till somebody didn't quite get our sense of humor, which was you and I having a knife fight with big knives. Remember that? In front of one of our tanks?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but we wouldn't have a knife fight in the studio. We'd get along. We get along most.
I think some of them probably get thrown at some point. Not a knife fight. There might be a chair going through a window.
Somebody said here, tell Pete to get a wood stove. Be a man.
You know, listen, here's the thing is, honestly, if I were doing a house today, I would do a mini split and a wood stove. Because it would be insulated well enough that a mini split would carry it as
yep.
the primary heat. Then I would have a wood stove for if the power goes out. I still got heat and I can still fry up some eggs.
Yep.
Good time.
Yeah, I remember first house we had where we had a wood stove. Power went out and we cooked on it. It was fun. You know, I obviously have a wood stove now. I don't care if the power goes out, except if it goes out for a prolonged period of time, you're probably going to be bunking with us. So, but that's another story.
Here's the other thing to that text. I don't own this building or the tall stove that's in it. So. But the next building that I do own, I'm going that route.
Okay.
So you're in good company, sir.
Okay. All right. Let's see. We've got a phone call on line one, Pete. So let's see what we got going on. Good morning. You're on the Voice of Maine.
Hi. I had a question about insulation.
Sure.
We have a second story house, and the second story is completely gutted. And we need to insulate it.
Mm-hmm.
We have a shingle roof under the new metal roof, and my father-in-law is calling this a hot roof
mm-hmm.
and says because of condensation, we need to put a vapor barrier down between the studs before putting fiberglass insulation in. Otherwise, it could cause rotting, and I didn't know if this is true or...
He wants to put a vapor barrier up near the roof?
Because we have a salt box designed house.
Okay.
So the whole second floor is gutted. He's saying to put vapor barriers between the studs and then putting the insulation over.
Yeah, no.
No?
No. What I would suggest, I would cut and fit foam into the cavities if it's a do-it-yourself project. And then, or you could use rock wool or fiberglass for that matter. But on the inside... put 1-inch foam up. Now this adds a little bit, it loses a little bit of headroom, but not much. I would put 1-inch foam and then strap it so you can put your sheetrock or whatever over that. But the 1-inch foam is going to be a vapor barrier that you are going to seal diligently, meticulously. You're going to seal it where it touches the floor, where the foam comes together, where the ceiling changes angle. And the reason for that is that that's going to prevent moisture from getting out. As a hot roof, hot roof is a roof that has no ventilation, and in this kind of house, it is kind of difficult to do a properly ventilated roof. So you get insulation right out to the roof deck. Now the ideal way would be to cut and fit foam because foam is impermeable. Nothing's getting through the foam. Putting a layer of foam on the inside is additional barrier to help make sure that nothing gets through. If you don't want to cut and fit foam, then use something like rock wool. But the detail of the that final layer of foam on the inside gets extremely critical.
Okay, so I'd put the foam in and then put my rolled insulation even in the wall.
No. You don't. Well, you could do it that way. You could. I would do the whole cavity. This is Tom speaking now. I would do the whole cavity with foam just because I want as much insulation as I can get up there. If you want to protect that area from a moisture problem, put an inch and a half of foam in, seal it around the whole, all the edges with canned foam, and then put your rock wool in on top of it. And you don't, that way you, you've got a, it's kind of functioning the way he's describing. If you just put fiberglass, put plastic in there, there's more potential for moisture getting out through it and causing a condensation issue.
Okay. And so that works because it's a livable space. It's just completely flooded.
Sure. Yeah. This is the time to do it.
Okay.
Okay.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye. That makes sense, Pete?
One thing I was going to say that I don't think you mentioned was when you were saying to put the 1 inch on, you were talking about going over the studs on the inside,
right?
Break all the thermal bridging,
yep,
to act as the moisture barrier, and then you seal up the seams with either silicone caulk or the canned spray foam.
Well, you can use latex caulk because it's indoor, it's inside the building, and it's going to be relatively warm at that point, so you don't have to even go to the expense.
Tape.
I'm sorry?
Not tape.
No, I mean, you can use tape if it's foil face, but it's expensive, and I prefer to use caulk because you sometimes get gaps, and those joints are really kind of critical. Any gap that you can't get a reasonable bit of caulk into, you use canned foam. And any project like that, I would have, at least 10 cans of foam with me to get started.
Yep.
Just because
my vote. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I'm done.
I was just gonna say my vote for that, seeing as it's stripped and open right now,
mm-hmm.
cut and fit foam into it.
Yeah.
And I know it's gonna be extra work than doing fiberglass or rock wool because those go very quickly. But cut and fit foam, spray foam the edges, then go over the whole thing with 1 inch of foam, seal it, and you're done. And it's as well insulated as it can possibly get. Because, if you put 6 inches of fiberglass in there, you can have R19. Well, what if next year the price of heating oil goes up to $4.50 a gallon? You're going to be wishing awfully hard that you just spent a little bit of extra time and money and gotten as much insulating R value in there as you can.
Well, there's
That's
also...
That's my feeling on it, because the price of fuel is just going to keep going up as the years go by.
And I'll go in another angle at this. There's also a comfort factor. That extra insulation will make it a lot more comfortable space that'll be much easier to keep warm and keep you happy. And I had a question, a text message came in. I'm confused if she's talking about ceiling or the wall studs. She's talking about both. This is I thought she said gambrel type roof. So you've got that.
I thought she said salt box.
Oh, salt box. Excuse me. So, we're talking about both. It's kind of important to do this the right way because it's one shot. I would be inclined not to do any knee walls. I wouldn't insulate knee walls. I would just go follow the rafter right down to the sill and just be meticulous about insulating that as well as you can because the extra step of doing a knee wall gets problematic. And plus, the knee wall space can then be used for storage. So that makes a big difference.
And we don't sell insulation anymore. So.
Yeah, so we have no axe to grind there. We sell cars, so come buy a car.
We sell cars. Buy a car, then buy a bunch of insulation.
Yeah. I've got a really...
Somewhere.
We only got about a minute left here, Pete. Quickly, somebody asked about insulating a chimney that's outside. You can do that. You can wrap the outside... It's a brick chimney. It's outside the building. You can insulate it. There's a clearance to combustibles issue with chimneys. Technically, you're supposed to have 2 inches clearance to combustible, so you would have to frame out. You may want to check with your code guy on that just to see where they are. And, Pete, I think I got to hit the music because we're out of time. And
All right.
Did you know Thursday was Sinatra's birthday? You do now. See you next week.
That's interesting. I did not know that.
Okay. All right. See you, Pete.